like to introduce our first speaker. Donald B. from Washington, D.C.
Hello, everybody. My name is Donnell, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Donnell.
And welcome to the NA phone line workshop. And I've been asked to do this workshop for the second time. And I'm glad that I've been asked to do this workshop. I really am sincere about my service work with the NA phone line. First of all, let me give you a little of my experience. I'm an addict that really never wanted to be an addict. I'm an addict that was introduced to this program and this fellowship many, many, many years before I got clean. And I'm one of those addicts that even as a little kid, I went to a meeting with an older brother. And I'm one of those addicts that said, I will never, ever want to be a part of anything like that that I experienced in my first meeting as a child. You know, so the struggle of getting here and the struggle of identifying with the disease of addiction was really hard for me, you know. But ever since I've been here, I've been in some type of service work. You know, it was like 3 months I got a coffee position, you know. Then I was a secretary a few months later. And why I'm sharing that is that I've been here a few times before, and I never really got into my recovery. I never really trusted Narcotics Anonymous, even though this was the last stop. Even though my last time coming here, I knew that this was the place for me. I knew that if anything was going to help, it was going to be Narcotics Anonymous. So when I got here, my real intentions for service was to find out who was doing what. You know, I always thought that somebody was sneaking off some money, somebody was doing something crooked, someone was doing something behind the scene. So I became a coffee monitor, and I came to area services and all that just to see what y'all were doing. And lo and behold, what I found out was that I was the one that needed some recovery, especially some step work. You know, after about 3 years of doing service on a local level, a guy came to me and asked me if I wanted to do the phone line, you know. And like I had about 2 years, I think I worked maybe steps one or two or something like that. And bottom line, I was still bouncing off of about six walls in a room, you know. And when he said the phone line, you know, I said, well, I don't know if I'm equipped to do that. Isn't that 12-step work? And he said, no. Basically, all you have to do is direct people to meetings. You know, and now I'm the type of person, because of service work, that kind of like drew me in. I'm an introverted person. I'm not really outgoing or anything like that. And I like living a secret life. But when I got to Narcotics Anonymous and started doing service, you know, people started pulling me in and dragging me in. And, you know, and recovery just happened around me. And when I got to the phone line, though, that was just a total another aspect of recovery that kind of like helped me see myself. My very first call on the phone line, I'll never forget, it was a young lady and she wanted to commit suicide, you know. And I remember it was a Saturday morning, I was just getting off of work, and I damn near freaked out. I didn't know what to do. And I remember calling my sponsor and a few other people. And they were telling me, you know, to direct her to 911 or to a hospital, or, you know, that we don't handle suicidal cases, you know. And so as I talked to the young lady, she didn't want to call 911, but she just wanted to talk, you know. And I'll never forget, I had gotten off 7 o'clock that morning, and I had my cell phone, new cell phone. And she kept talking, and I kept listening. And she kept talking about her problem and what she was going through. And I just was, oh, really? And I identified here and there with her. And I'm talking about for 4 hours she talked. And my phone was about to die. And I told her, well, look, I got to plug it up. And I remember it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. And she had calmed down. And I mean, I was kind of like getting tired of listening to her. But what she said, the next thing she said, I heard her come out of her mouth was, where did you say that meeting was? And I was like, oh, man, I forgot what I was doing, you know, and I was like, yeah, that meeting is so-and-so and so-and-so, and I gave her the directions, and she said she felt much better, and she didn't really want to do what she said she wanted to do, and she was interested in getting to that meeting, you know, and we kind of like dialogued back and forth for a few days, but I'll never forget how that made me feel. You know, just to be able, you know, and it wasn't what I said over the phone or anything like that. But bottom line, it was just, she just needed someone just to listen to her for 4 hours. You know what I mean? And she had calmed down and she kept calling back for a few weeks and let me know her progress, you know. And that's what the phone line has been doing for me. You know, it seemed like every episode I've met people from all around the world. You know, and usually when I get these calls is when I'm in a space where I'm in an introverted space where I'm either have cut back on my meetings or I haven't spoken to a lot of people or I'm just so withdrawn. And then the phone will ring and it'll be somebody on the other line from Chicago or somebody desperately wanting to get to a meeting. And it'll just pull me right out of myself. And what I normally do is I'll try to meet up with the person because that'll get me out of the house and into a meeting myself, you know. And you know, so that's why I love this work on the phone line. You know, it really helps me. It helps me get outside of myself. You know, there's a couple more experiences that I want to share and kind of like a warning, too. You know, there's been a couple of calls where they almost turned into a relationship. You know, and I never had a relationship on. Yeah, and well, what happened was, you know, the other person was going through the struggle, and I'm trying to like, well, I could direct you to a meeting, but, and she kept saying, well, I'm not an addict, and I was like, well, you could go to a meeting anyway, because that's what we do. But bottom line, that was ongoing for like, I'm talking about 6 months, and we actually kind of like started to connect, you know, and I'll never forget, you know, I was afraid to tell my sponsor, because I knew that it wasn't really, it just didn't feel right. You know, and I didn't know who this person, she's from London or something, you know, and we was getting, she was getting ready to come down and meet and all that. And I remember telling my sponsor, man, finally telling my sponsor that what was going on and how uncomfortable I really felt about, you know, see, what my intentions was this chick had a lot of money, bottom line. So I knew where I was going with this. And what that helped me do was see where I was at in my recovery, too. You know, and so that was another aspect of the phone line helping me personally in my, you know, spiritual growth, you know. And there's two more incidences I want to share about. The other one was this young kid from New York, you know. And again, we identified and they was trying to get into a program. And so we kind of dialogued off and on for a couple of weeks. And I kind of like directed them to the meeting and they shared and they got help. And then I haven't heard from them. And it was been like maybe 2 years. And again, this is one of those days where I was in such a funky space. And I just get this phone call from some guy that I met 2 years ago, telling me that he got 2 years clean and thanking me for picking up the phone. And that just, you know, it just made my whole, you know, pulled me out that space and all that, you know. The final incident I want to share about was, it was a phone call, and it wasn't from another recovering addict needing help. It was from my sister in Philadelphia. And through the years, I've gained some experiences and knowledge as to the do's and don'ts and what we do and what we don't do and how to behave on the phone line. And when it was my sister, my baby sister is the one that kind of like scooped me up, wiped my ass, and tried to help me get clean early on. You know, and recently she's been doing things that triggered, you know, to me that she's had a problem. But I didn't want to ask her. I didn't want to. Family members been asking me to get into it. And so what happened was she called, and the only thing she said was, I want to make it to one of those meetings. You know, and from my experience on the phone line, what I was able to do was, actually what I did, I went up to Philadelphia where she was, but I was able to kind of like contact members on the phone line up there. We was able to get to a meeting up there. And bottom line, what I was able to do was just kind of like not ask her what she's using, what's your problem, and all of that, but just leave her in the hands of Narcotics Anonymous in the Philadelphia area. You know, and that's basically what we do. We direct people to meetings, and we just let it go and let God take over. You know, so that's my experience. I'm glad to have helped someone if I have, and I'll keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm an addict. And I'd like to introduce my second speaker, Jennifer B. from Montgomery County, Maryland.
Thanks, Barbara. I'm an addict. My name is Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer.
And Donnell, thank you so much for sharing your experience. The reason the phone line was really important to me when the idea of the service position came up in our area, there was an opening for a phone line liaison. And I went to area service because I wanted to be that person because of some experience, which was when I had about 8 years clean, I was unemployed at the time, and I had a friend of mine with the HIV virus in recovery. And he was really sick. He was really struggling with his illness. And he and I had been going over to his house and getting him to meetings and taking care of him and buying groceries and cleaning up after his cat and all that. And we had gotten really close. You know, he'd like lay on the bed and I'd hold a washcloth over his head and we would talk. And he was really talking about, he was talking through some stuff regarding his life, and because his life was going to end pretty soon. And he asked me, would I take him to Florida to get some treatment that he had researched because he was trying to buy some time. And when we got into the airport, he sort of entered into dementia, which I was completely unprepared for. Like, I had no idea what that was. And so essentially the virus got into his brain. And he became a very difficult, crotchety person and didn't really know me anymore. Kind of, it was very stressful. And we got down to Miami, and we checked into a little hotel, and he was paranoid, and all these things I just didn't know how to handle. And I was down there a couple days, and the doctors were looking at me, and they were just shaking their head, and they were like, little girl, go home. You are not, you are not prepared to handle this. You know, hire a professional. And because it was a very stressful time, and we were in this little motel, I called Narcotics Anonymous because I really needed a meeting. And it was about 7 o'clock at night, and they said, we have to call you back. And I said, you can't call me back. I'm in a motel room, and the office closes at 5 o'clock. Well, we have to call you back. I said, you can't call me back. I won't be able to get the phone call. Can you get me the information about where a meeting is? No, ma'am, we can't do that. Well, all you have to do is call them and get the information, and then I'll call you back. And you didn't. No, I'm sorry, ma'am, we can't do that. And I was really disheartened. And I needed to talk to another addict because even though I was with another addict, this addict had no concept of the second step or any other thing having to do with recovery. And I was really powerless. So much to my chagrin, as much as I didn't want to do this, I called another fellowship and they answered. I got a human being on the other end that said, where are you? We'll come get you. We'll take you to a meeting. And that saved my life for that particular, you know, incident or whatever. At least my sanity. And so when the phone line thing came up to me, for me it was always important to have like a human being on the other end of the phone, you know. And so, and when I went to the area, I went down to the trust clinic and I learned about the new system that was put into place. And I was so happy and I'm so grateful for the addicts that stepped up to the plate and researched it and went out of their way and wanted, this was important to them too, that there was another human being on the other end of the line when somebody called. And, you know, that really, that chokes me up when I think about it. And kind of like Donnell shared, it's sort of like when that phone rang and I would just talk to somebody who was high. You know, I remember one time this woman was like, well, she was loaded, you know. She was like, well, how long does it take to come down off of such and such drug? And I was like, I don't know. And even if I did, you know, the do's and don'ts that we went over in these workshops are really important because they teach us boundaries, you know. Don't argue with an addict. You know, don't argue with somebody and say, no, you are an addict. You really need to go. You know, just listen. You're not a doctor. Don't make that call. You know? Talking to a professional once. You know, she said, I got this guy, and he's just out of rehab, and he doesn't have a place to live. And we have a list in our packet of some suggestions. You know, it's not always about where's the next meeting. And I said to her something like, well, there's the Mitch Schneider shelter. You know, they don't turn anybody away. They, you know, oh, well, you know how that place is. I can't send them there. I said, no, I don't. I had to make it really clear that I am not one of you. I'm not a professional. I'm just an addict in recovery. And I do know what it's like just because I've been to meetings there or I've picked up people there to take them to meetings. So I had to be really clear with her. And it was hard for me not to lose my patience with her. I hate to admit that, but it was really hard for me not to, you know, and so in one sense, keeping in mind that I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous and I represent Narcotics Anonymous. So don't lose my shit with another person over the phone. Just like when I come to a convention, don't go out onto the main strip here and start cussing out the locals. You know what I mean? Because I represent Narcotics Anonymous. No, that happened to me in my town once. We have an annual convention where I used to live. And these people, real quick thing, I don't mean to sidetrack, but they were getting rowdy with the locals. They were shouting the F-bombs at these shop owners. And I went back to the convention. I got up to the podium and I said, please don't conduct this kind of behavior in my town. And then you go back to New Hampshire or Connecticut or wherever you leave, and people who in my town who know I'm in Narcotics Anonymous, a member of NA, you know, they're going to put that judgment on NA. So being on the phone line, you know, that has kind of helped me keep in check, too. And the bottom line, the most important thing is to help the addict who still suffers. Because when I came in here and I was suffering, I got a lot of help. And I got a lot of help from a lot of different sources. And people loved me until I could love myself. And so maybe that woman that I talked to who was like, well, how long does it take to come down off of whatever she was on? You know, I made some suggestions, and kind of like what Donnell said, she came back at some point in the conversation and was like, well, where is that meeting again? And that's when it just like, oh, that's what it's all about. And other phone calls, like one time I get a call from a couple of kids, hey man, we're on this road trip and we're going down to Norfolk, Virginia to catch these bands to play and we're going to be in St. Mary's County. Is there a meeting somewhere around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon? Well, no, there just wasn't. Let me check. I knew there wasn't going to be. I called them back, you know, because we have to sort of call people back. And, you know, no, there wasn't. But we talked, you know, we talked about the freedom from active addiction, about like how we're able to go do these things, you know, go catch a band in another state, jump in another car with an addict and go, and how exciting is that? And my experience with that clean was, you know, there's this band called The Grateful Dead, and typically people get really loaded at these shows, and I got clean and somebody went, hey man, let's go to a Dead show, and I was like, what? Isn't that a bunch of hippies? Like, I was a punk rock girl. What? No. Oh, come on, it'll be fun. So fuck it, I went, right? And I was hooked. So I like went to 30 some odd Grateful Dead shows before Jerry Garcia died. Clean, all clean, and there were meetings at those concerts. And that was cool to connect with other addicts around the country. Just follow the yellow balloon, you know. So little secret society. I've really been grateful for the opportunity to serve on the phone line. It's also given me the opportunity to meet other addicts from other areas. And who I would not normally know otherwise, and get to know them, you know, and that's been a real treat. And I don't know where I'm at with my time, but 10 minutes. Okay, well, the phone line has been, like I said, it's just been really, it's been another aspect of service that was different. You know, my first service position was making coffee. And that was good for me because it got me to the meeting early and it made me stay late, and instead of me running off and not wanting to talk to anybody. And so that learning how to talk, you know, I've been able to exercise that on the phone line. And I used to be a really shy person. And it's just nice to be able to take calls and share experience, strength, and hope, or just even direct somebody. You know, somebody, it takes a lot of humility to make that call, to say, I need help. And so for me, as somebody who takes that call, I want to be able to step up to the plate and give that person everything I can, whether it be information about where to get a shower, where to get a meal. Sometimes all it is just getting somebody to that meeting. Even if they don't want to go, you know, hopefully you've planted a seed. And, you know, it's helped me stay clean. And really that's all I have. I love Narcotics Anonymous. It's helped me stay clean. Whatever I can do for the addict who's still suffering, who's just coming back or whatever, you know, I want to be there. My friend Jono says, let me see if I get this right. He says, the shame is not in using. The shame is in not coming back. You know, and every time I came back, I'd put like 30 days together. I'd use, I'd come back. People would say, it's okay, we love you, we're glad you're here. Please keep coming back. You know, and so for whatever it's worth, I'm just grateful to be clean today. And working on the phone line has really helped that process. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm an addict. And I'd like to introduce my third speaker, S. from Arlington, Virginia.
Namaste. My name's Om. I'm an addict.
Hi, Om.
I'm nervous. It's good to be here. It's good to be clean today. That's a big deal. That is a big deal. And I'm saying that a lot for myself because I forget how big of a deal it is. It's been over 6 years since I've used anything. Well, drugs. I use other things. I use other things to try and fill that hole from time to time. But I haven't used drugs in over 6 years, and I'm clean today. And before I walked in here, I prayed. You know, I was walking down the hall, and I walked past the last room where they were having meetings, and I knew the guy outside. He's like, where are you going? You know, I was looking for a little, you know, space where I could kind of get down on the ground and surrender. And surrender is incredibly important to me, you know, and I need to stay out of my head and continue to take action. And I'm just going to talk about myself a little bit and then, you know, tie the phone line into it too. Because I was riding up with my friend RJ, and who's in the program, and I'm grateful, you know, grateful to have friends in the program and people that understand me, people that understand the disease of addiction, people that understand obsession, you know, people that can empathize with me, you know, people that know, you know, when I'm feeling shame and I've been acting out in my addiction, in recovery, clean, you know, and isolating, and not showing up for myself and not showing up for others. They know, and they're okay when I come back. They don't judge me and they don't hate me, you know. But they want me to get better, and that's amazing. And that's some of the stuff that I can start to give back as well. I got started in phone line service when I was. I was a GSR for my home group, and I went to area service in Rock Creek in D.C., and they were going over open positions, and it was my first area meeting I'd ever been to, and I volunteered to be the phone line liaison. And I have a tendency to, you know, just bite off more than I can chew and jump at things and want to do them, and, you know, because I'm ambitious and I have trouble saying no, and I have trouble with reality, right? I have trouble knowing my constraints and my boundaries. But either way, I thought it was kind of a little weird and a little odd that position wasn't covered, because this is for, you know, if addicts are calling and they're trying to get to a meeting, or if they want to learn about NA, and our primary purpose is to carry the message to the still suffering addict, you know, why aren't people jumping to do this kind of service, you know? And NA has given me a meaning for my life. You know, drugs, my addiction is one of the most powerful forces I've ever dealt with. The compulsion, the craving, you know, the need to just do one more, and the perception that it's going to fix everything, and the fantasy that everything is going to be okay, and nothing else matters because I'm fucked up, all that is incredibly powerful. And, you know, and it's strong and powerful. And a lot of my spirituality isn't like this, because I come in here with looking for this high and this strong, intense, euphoric high. And I think in my experience, recovery isn't about this strong, like, boom, bam, boom, like, you know, I go to a meeting and everything's great, and I love life, and I'm walking, you know, tall all the time. And it's about, you know, a lot of subtle things. It's about coming around for 6 years and then talking to my friend a couple nights ago and saying, I love to be negative and I love self-pity and I love to sit in that. And I like shame, and talking about, you know, how he can share with me, and I'm open-minded, and he says that shame is part of my experience from the past. It's about a pattern that doesn't work anymore, and that's why it doesn't work, because I truly believed that if I shame myself enough and if I beat myself up enough, then I will get better, you know, and it doesn't work, you know, and there's other people whose experience around here can tell me that it doesn't work, and it hasn't worked for me, but I keep trying, which is what I do as an addict. And so a little light bulb goes off, right? And I can carry that little candle with me, you know, and that's my latest kind of awareness, is I need to be grateful. I need to be centered with what I have and not what I don't have, because there's too much that I don't have, but there's so much that I have that I don't even think about. I have these big dreams, right? I want to make a difference. I want to change the world. And I'm so grateful to be here today, because unless I stop and look around me, I don't know that I'm doing that. I'm like, holy shit, I'm doing this. I was one of the people, and this is something new for me, is I'm okay talking about something good about myself, right? It's easy. I hear a lot of like, I need to do that. I'm too much of a perfectionist. I'm hard on myself and this and that. And I think there's a time and place for that, but I want to give myself some credit, you know. I have a background in information technology. I know systems and computers, and I'm good at getting things done, and you know, I work in an environment, and I'm an addict, right? So I'm working in an environment where, like, I can kind of be a leader, and I want to, like, do things, and I can, like, and I come into NA and try to do service, and things don't happen like that. You know, things are a lot slower, right? Because everyone has their own perspectives, and everyone is right, right? And everyone, you know, and so I have to kind of slow down, and I have to breathe, but I love doing service, because, you know, NA, it's NA working. And it's, you know, because people talk about area ego and you know, don't go there and this and that. And even my sponsor has opinions on, like, stuff. And he's another addict, right? So, you know, so he's not perfect, you know. So I'm free to have my own opinions and disagree with my sponsor, which is okay, and I'm grateful for that. And I was one of the people that helped set up the new system. You know, in the past, when someone would call, it would go to voicemail, and then we had this complicated procedure. We had to call once an hour to check, and nobody wanted to do it, and people wouldn't call. And it, I mean, the bottom line is it wasn't working. And if it's not working, you know, it's time to try something different. And we were paying a lot of money for it. And one of the areas within our region was doing it a different way, where calls would get forwarded directly. So I can stop right now for a moment and realize that because of my effort and people willing to listen and their efforts, right, I'm part of a community of people, right, together, and you know, my spirit and my willingness, that I've been able to make a difference in the world, right? And I never, and that's a big deal in like a city as big as Washington, D.C., in the metropolitan area, and the number of calls we get, and the number of addicts that call, and the fact that they get to meetings and family members. It's not just addicts that call. Family members call, hospitals and institutions call, you know. And I have to, it's helped me learn about traditions. It's helped me kind of hold my tongue, keep my opinions to myself. And also, you know, I struggle with people pleasing and wanting to fix stuff, right? So someone calls me with a problem. Sometimes I can't help them, you know? Sometimes a mom is calling and she's crying and everything's crazy, and it reminds me of my mom and how much I put her through. And I can't talk because I'm like, damn, you know, this is my story, except it's my mom calling, you know, is what I hear. And the lady was like, you know, what's wrong? Why aren't you talking? And it was just, it was tough. I was in shock. And you know, it's like if the addict isn't willing to go to the meeting, if the addict isn't going to go to the meeting, there's not really anything I can do. And sometimes I have to say that. I'm sorry, you know. Like, if they're not willing to go to a meeting, there's nothing I can do for you. And that's sad. I'm just grateful today. The people I've met as a result of doing service, other people that also care about carrying the message to the still suffering addict, like beautiful spirits and energy. And I think there's something special about people that do service in NA, and I love being around, you know. I just took another service position. I'm doing vice chair of my region, or my area, sorry. And that's new. I don't know what else to say. Yeah, I'm grateful. I think it's a big deal. I'm grateful that I've done service and I'm giving back. And yeah, I think I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thanks, Owen.